Hi there, and welcome back to another edition of The Business Edge. This is a program where we take a hard look at issues that are affecting the business, economy, and related islanders, but it's primarily a business focus. There's a lot of elements that are affecting business these days. One of the biggest things that businesses have to contend with, aside from tariffs and some of these exogenous things they can't really have any control over, another exponential impact is the cost of energy. And energy is something that every business has to come to terms with, generally has to acquire it externally to the business. And there's a couple of primary inputs. One is oil, which is under great duress these days and probably will continue to be for an extended period of time due to the Mideast conflict. And this has spiked oil rates, not unprecedented, but certainly brings them back up to where they were a couple of years ago. Right now, we're hovering around $100 a barrel. There has been some suggestion that if this is protracted and goes on too long, it could go up to as much as $200 a barrel. And that gets into a sort of a price point that really challenges islanders, challenges transportation costs, whether that's by air or truck, and everything pretty much on PEI arrives by via our bridge and by transport by truck. So increasing energy prices of gasoline, diesel, heating oil, these are a direct input cost imposition for businesses and consequently for islanders. So let's have a look at what happens on your electrical bill. There's two components to the electrical bill, and I've got one here, residential, one commercial. This is from last month. Just to give you some context, on the residential side, so if we look at the residential billing, the first chunk that you're going to pay as a resident costs 17.23 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, if you use a lot more, it goes down to 13.75. But 17 cents is the base price that every islander is going to pay. In addition to that, whether you're a consumer of residential electricity or you are a consumer commercially, there's a connection fee, and depending on the number of meters that you operate with, so if you have a a commercial building or a residential apartment unit, you might have 5, 6, 10, 12 meters. Each meter has a connection fee, so that would be about $25 per connection times the number of meters you have. So it's actually $24.57 every month as a connection to be able to connect to the grid to access the power. Ideally, you'd consolidate meters if you've got more than one to try to reduce that cost. There's another fee that is a kind of a hidden and anticipated benefit today. So a few years ago, Dennis King, because energy prices were increasing, made the political decision to rebate islanders a percentage of their energy. So as a residential consumer, you get a 10% rebate back. And that was a short-term measure to really help islanders at a time when energy prices were fluctuating. Unfortunately, this now a couple of years forward, we have been enjoying this discount without probably really understanding the context of it, the timeline or the rationale behind it. So every islander is enjoying a 10% reduction in their energy fee. In fact, you're just getting an advance on a tax. You're being taxed, you're just getting that rebate back. So it's really a shell game for the consumer, but it could be perceived as good politics. And I assume that's the reason that this was enacted. So today you get a 10% rebate. Consumer or commercial property owners or businesses do not get that rebate. It's only eligible because the largest voting block is residential. So the individual gets it, but not the business. It just increases the input cost for a business, making the competitive positioning a little bit more challenging from a business perspective. Now, the other thing to consider, we all pay HST on everything except for snacks, basically. Now, for a commercial enterprise or business, the 15% harmonized sales taxes charged on everything, including your electrical consumption. You can get that back. It's an input tax credit. You deduct it off your revenues, and you get that rebate back eventually from the federal government. Consumers don't get that. So a residential consumer pays 15% tax on their bill. They get a 10% rebate on part of their bill, resulting in a net 5% tax. So this is really just a shell game, and it's ultimately moving your tax bucket around from one pocket to another. Ideally, you know, maybe we would have gotten an HST rebate, it would have been a 15% discount, but it probably played for good politics at the time. Unfortunately, I don't know how you reduce that now. People have become habitually accustomed to getting that discount. Are they going to be able to stomach not getting that when the province says, we no longer have any money, we're going to have to cut back that 10% benefit that we'd given you? People probably will riot on the streets. So let's look quickly at the cost. We know that the residential cost is $17.23 per kilowatt hour, $17.23. For a commercial consumer, the cost of the first block of energy is $0.2113 per kilowatt hour. So it's more expensive for the business than it is for the resident. And the second block is about the same as the residential user, not a big difference. You do get the tax back, but it is a cost. It's an input cost, and ideally those are passed on to consumers. It's just how business will operate. Relatively, let's look at the comparable costs across other jurisdictions. So the lowest residential electrical cost in Canada, these are approximate, but they should be pretty accurate. Quebec is 8.05 cents compared to the 17 plus cents that we get charged in PEI. That is a big discrepancy. Let's look at the commercial or business costs. The lowest commercial electrical cost in Canada is currently Manitoba at 9.69 cents per kilowatt. Again, let's compare that to PEI, 21.13 cents per kilowatt hour. That is a big discrepancy. So the concern that I have looking at this is a rational actor over time, when you compare the gross tax imposition, the input tax costs, which are all escalating. So every small change is a big impact. Might look at these costs and say, would I rather pay 8-9 cents? Or am I happy with the 17, 21 cents per kilowatt hour? On a large volume of energy, it is considerable and has to be sort of, you know, evaluated as a rational actor. Something else to kind of consider is the escalating costs. And right now, we'll talk about this in a minute. There's three sort of proposed cost increases, all rational, and I'll go through the rationalization. One thing to consider is the utility for PEI. There's two of them. There's the Summerside Electrical Utility that operates primarily in the boundaries of the city of Summerside. It's owned by the city. They generate their own electricity. They buy some from the mainland. It comes through on Maritime Electric's lines, but they also have some wind energy generation. That is great, not always 100% reliable, but the city of Summerside have become very fortified and self-reliant. This is a bit of a bone of contention in that we've got this little bastion of energy productivity in a big sea of larger company transmission and distribution. And really, we don't generate a lot of electricity now outside of some wind farms. Mostly what we do in PEI is transmit and distribute. And that's what we have engaged Fortis, which is a Newfoundland company who own Maritime Electric, to do for Islanders. They maintain the lines, they ensure we've got access to power, and they negotiate the best rates they can. As a shareholder of Maritime Electric or Fortis, these are great, utility companies in general are great dividend aristocrats. They give you an assured rate of return, and that's bound by legislation. So in the case of Maritime Electric, they have a guaranteed rate of return. It's actually called a return of equity. So whatever they spend, if they have to repair lines, whatever their investments are, they're assured of getting a 9.7 or a range of about 9.7%. I think today it might be around 9.35%, but that is a sort of an assured return in equity. It's great if you are a shareholder and you've got stocks and a utility. It's not so good if you're a consumer and you know that your rates are going to be increasing to embed and accommodate that return on equity. So PEI 9.35, interestingly, in Newfoundland, where Maritime Electric's head office, head company is, Fortis, their return on equity is 8.5%. So that's a bit of a discrepancy. Why that is and how it was negotiated, I'm sure there's a rationale, but we won't get into that too much. Now, a couple of things we want to look at is three independent buckets as to why electrical rates today are on the cusp of increasing. And this is just a compounded cost that Islanders have to absorb in addition to rising food costs, rising energy costs in the case of gasoline and electricity. These are all critical components of our island operating budgets and something we don't have much control over unless we were to put solar generation or some other function that we can become a little bit more self-reliant. But there's a big upfront capital cost to that. So here we are. The first bucket to look at is a temporary surcharge that's tied to the extended outage at Point Lepreau. So Point Lepreau generates nuclear energy. It's the most cost-effective, reliable source of energy. But the old plant, Point Lepreau, needed some refurbishment, and there were some cost overruns. So there's kind of a in that guaranteed rate of return, this will result in about a 7% hit to Islanders, about $32 million. So that's one of the elements of the it's not even proposed. It's kind of a pretty much assured cost increase. Electricity cost really is only going to continue to move in one direction. There's not much expectation that costs will retreat. You know, it's expensive infrastructure. Costs are going up for the utility operators. I would expect no discount, and I don't know how long the province can continue to unnaturally provide a reduction in the cost to residential stakeholders. So I think we need to be prepared for an increase. So the first bucket relates to Point Lepreau. The second bucket, it's a bit of a Fiona hangover. So there's about $37 million in restoration costs that Maritime Electric has sought. They've gone to IRAC, everybody's favorite public sort of institution that manages some of these costs. But they're looking for an increase annually of about 2.4%. So that's the 7%, the 2.4%, but that's a third one. So the third bucket, and this is a little bit more controversial, to have more reliable local energy generation. Maritime Electric decommissioned a very old and probably inefficient diesel plant on the Charlottetown waterfront. But they recognize because of the government's policies to induce electrical consumption, this would include primarily, it's probably the demands of heat pumps and air conditioning, electric vehicles, all these modern sort of improvements are all creating more demand on the grid. And if you, there's actually sites you can go on and you can watch by, you know, minute and hour, the generation that's occurring, either by pulling energy off island, which we pay for, or the wind generation and how much reliance we have on domestically created energy. But you can track that and you can see that we are quite legitimately in a very perilous near brownout situation, not infrequently. So Maritime Electric's comments on the stress in the system is real. So the third cost to consider here, the first was $32 million, second's $37 million. This one's $427 million. It might be $500 million by the time it's done, but it's a new generation plant on the Charlottetown waterfront. And it's been attacked by critics who have concern about locking in our energy prices to fossil fuels. Fossil fuels are dirty. Diesel energy is it's a dirty fuel. There's not a lot of options. We're not going to have, we probably should have micro generation or micro nuclear, something that could be a little bit more environmentally friendly, maybe more cost effective over the long run. But for a small province like PEI, our options are limited. The diesel generation plant is deemed the most appropriate for our needs. They can turn it up, turn it down, throttle it as required by the demands of the public. But it does tie us to the cost of oil. And as we can see, and we discussed earlier, the cost of oil is under a little bit of duress at the moment. Now, there's some things that the federal government with their nation building projects have talked about, increasing access to domestic oil supply from Alberta. It's got to flow through Quebec to get to the refineries in the East Coast. That would probably be a good thing, at least give us some reliable and stable supply and pricing. Today, that's not an option, and it's probably not an option, you know, in the next 5 years for sure. So that's a little bit of a background on our energy costs. It's a bit of a consideration as to why we are looking at energy increases, which we are pretty much assured are going to transition in only one way, which is up. And each of these three considerations, you know, independently have an impact. Unfortunately, all three of them are necessary and arguably required to be implemented in some fashion. We do have to, you know, cost accommodate the responsiveness that the utility provided us during Fiona. We do need additional power generation or access to power. And, you know, we have to probably find a path to generate it locally as we had done in the past. Is the beautiful Charlottetown waterfront the best location? Not sure. The minister responsible, Gilles Arsenault, certainly feels that that's the best location. It's probably a convenient location because it ties into the infrastructure, but I'm not sure how much consideration has gone to other locations. And that's, I guess, you know, the situation that we're in today. We're going to take a little break. We'll come right back and we'll take one last look into a couple of considerations for energy efficiency and payback. And then you can make your own determination on how best to proceed.
LaborMind gives your HR team the data to stop reacting and start stabilizing. It's about managing your workforce proactively. This episode is proudly sponsored by LaborMind.
All right, let's take one last look at the situation of energy security versus our return on oil. And the generator project, which is the most controversial aspect and the most, you know, expensive consideration that will affect ratepayers, is, you know, it's really the trade-off between the security of reliable energy access versus this return on the fluctuating cost of oil. So the generator project is where the debate stops being about a one-year surcharge and becomes a generational choice. And Maritime Electric's dispatchable generation filings from October 2024, the application estimate for the project at that time was $427 million. It's not inconceivable that this would certainly escalate by the time of implementation, and we could be looking at a $500 million hit that then needs to be adjusted to the ratepayers. If you add in this dirty little secret that makes it land, even if turbines can run on gas, PEI has no access to liquefied natural gas. There's no pipeline. It stops just not far off the bridge. And there's several industrial companies that actually transport it in every day, actually continually every day. You'll see the trucks running with liquefied natural gas. If there was another more efficient alternative to diesel, like LNG, that would ideally be better. And I think the cost of the pipeline to extend it from where it terminates into PEI, even into Borden, is something that would make some sense and probably should be evaluated. Hopefully people have looked at that as one of the considerations. But, you know, there's a bit of a paradox here. You're told to electrify. You're encouraged to, you know, buy an EV or a fleet of EVs, add your heat pumps, some of which are free. So it's certainly you're induced to do so. You try to be part of a solution. And then on a cold winter peak, the marginal electrons that should be coming from a diesel-fired generator just aren't available. So what do? You rely on having to refossilize the system to keep it stable. That is a policy paradox. Now, to be fair, the reliability is not optional for a province. Hospitals, food supply chains, senior citizens, data systems, public safety. Blackouts really aren't something that we can accommodate. But the challenge becomes, is the climate change trajectory that we'd be implementing on consistent with the policies that we've been advocating as far as greening our province, becoming a net zero economy, probably a little bit aspirational, but it does seem to be not congruent with some of the things that have been advocated by the current government. So is there anything we can do to hack our Powerball bills to get a little bit less, you know, power demands? In other provinces, we can use net metering to adjust peak load demand. So you might run your dishwasher at night, charge your EV in the evenings when people aren't consuming power. But in the wintertime, if you watch the consumption, when people get home at 4 p.m., 5 p.m., 6 p.m., when the house lights come on, when the oven spikes up, when the dishwasher and the washing machine are going, that's where we're peaking on a pretty consistent basis in the depth of winter. And that is not a time that you want to be concerned about running out of power. So could we have a staggered start to beat these demand charges? That would be ideal. It's not presently an option. What would be required to upgrade the meters to allow for this option? And is the way in which we purchase energy not providing us the consideration of fluctuating power pricing or encouraging people to use power demands at different times? It's not just a matter of turning off the HVAC to try to save energy. It's got to be something more deliberate that's going to flatten that spike. And remember, our spikes on our power bills are really the rate at which we pay. So the highest level at which we spike our consumption, that's kind of where the cost gets captured. So, you know, you want to keep your energy consumption steady and ideally low. That would mean using appliances at off-peak hours, which the rate doesn't change, but it's still an efficient consideration. You know, with all these considerations on investments and paybacks, does any of it really net the consumer a more competitive consideration on their energy consumption? The answer is probably not. Our rates are disproportionately high. We are an island. We're isolated. We've got our own unique dislocation from the North American energy grid. So we would expect that we'd pay a little bit higher energy rate. The question is, what can we do to become more resilient, more energy independent? Can there be co-location of generation equipment? You know, could businesses in an industrial park generate electricity and share that? Today, you can't because you have to access the lines that Maritime Electric own, and the transmission is 100% controlled by one utility. Even the Summerside utility needs to rely on Maritime Electric to access energy from the mainland. They can't piggyback. They've got to piggyback on the Maritime Electric's infrastructure. They can't run a direct line or have a direct feed. So these are all additional considerations that I hope our policymakers are looking at. But that's a quick snapshot on a few considerations of the PEI energy grid, distribution, management, and costs. Thanks for tuning into the Business Edge. Look forward to enjoying another conversation sometime very soon.